Okay, and your metronome's on.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, so the Don't Get Him Started podcast is finally back on. Everybody's been clamoring for it, been asking about it. I promised a lot of people that January 1st would be the day we came back. I didn't really give them the asterisk on that January 1st is when it would eventually
when we
get
start
there.
Researching.
Yeah, when we would start to get there, start watching the films. And the first film we're going to talk about as we count down to Endgame, which is the second part to Infinity War, we're going to start with the Hulk. Why are we starting with the Hulk? Well, the Hulk, in my opinion, was something that was so outside of what we currently know as the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as it wasn't really necessarily planned upon, continuing that thematic drive as we know it now. But, that movie itself came out the same year, and we're going to talk about later some of the other movies that came out in 2008, but it came out the same year as Iron Man. And so we're going to...
Which was the quintessential Marvel film.
That was it.
In a sense.
Yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And this had to follow that up.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about this because it is a part of that universe, but it's very different, as we shall see. I enjoyed the movie.
I thought it was like if I had to give it a score, like it'd be like a 6 out of 10. Like, it wasn't bad. It was just an above average comic book film, is what I think it was. Like, yeah, it wasn't, say, like Batman v Superman levels of cringe, I would say.
Yeah.
It was a much better made film than even that was.
I feel like I got some weird gutter palette for those kind of movies, because there are people, you just mentioned it, you are one of these people that did not like Batman versus Superman. And I, for some reason, I don't know if it's because like I wipe everything out when I watch it, like I just kind of give myself a quick lobotomy, but I watch it and I enjoy it for what it is. I even like Justice League. I thought some of it was shitty, but obviously I think the majority of the world likes Wonder Woman, right? So I think we can all agree on that. I enjoyed that one.
Good film.
Yeah. I think it's just, if I go into it just completely, numb to everything else, I like it. Now, I'm not saying they were amazing films, but, like this one, you give it a 6 out of 10. I'm there. But I did like it. In researching some of the stuff that went into the making of this film, they focused on some pretty, I would say, small things, like the blood drop when Edward Norton first cuts his finger, when he's helping fix a thing. That CGI of that blood dropping onto the bottle, from what I read, took months to render and to finalize, which was crazy. Yeah,
and probably cost like $200,000.
Oh, I think it was more than that. Yeah. That's nuts. So what we're going to do,
crazy.
What we're going to do from here on out is we're going to watch these films in order as they lead up to Endgame. And then, we'll finally get to that film and to be able to enjoy that. But we'll watch them all chronologically as they lead up into that final film. So the first one today, as we've mentioned, we're going to be talking about The Hulk. The Hulk came out in a debut issue of a comic book in The Incredible Hulk, May 1962. So he was, and you want to go through that quick little backstory on how he became the Hulk?
Yeah, because usually, like, in, like, the comic books, like, it's, like, gamma radiation exposure that causes him to become this, like, super, super powerful being. And he's fueled by his rage in most of the comics. Like, he's had, like, different Hulk characters have happened. I mean, you've had, like, Worldbreaker Hulk. You've had, Planet Hulk. You've had, just, like, Avengers Hulk. But, like the Hulk that kind of, like, we know and love is the one who was exposed to gamma radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you make him angry, Hulk come out and Hulk get mad. But in this film, he still was exposed to gamma radiation, but he was also working on a version of the super soldier serum that Captain America has. And that's why he turned into the Hulk in the first place.
Okay.
But it was not of his own volition. Like, he was contracted by the general to make the serum, but he told him it was for a gamma radiation project.
So tell me this. So is, and maybe you can answer this, and that's what I kind of, because we see this with the Abomination. He gets the injections. There's the one that goes into his spine and pops, which is just unnerving to listen to.
Oh, yeah. Made a real nice sound.
Yeah, he gets those, and then he gets kicked by the Hulk. He's broken. The doctor's saying, you know, he's got a racehorse heart, and he's going to make it through. And that's the only reason he's alive is because his heart kept beating after the Hulk just kicked the shit out of him. Mm-hmm. But it's not until he gets what the doctor at the university distributes into his blood.
Mm-hmm. He was synthesizing the Hulk's blood.
So did the Hulk, was he injected with the super soldier serum and then exposed to gamma rays, which created the Hulk? Okay.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah. They explain it in like the first 15 seconds of the beginning credits, because when you see the beginning credits of that movie, it shows like the backstory of the project that he was working on.
Yeah, that's the one thing I didn't have time for, though, was to watch. That's like another little mini movie.
Right. And that's basically how they explain that whole thing. And then the general also mentions it in passing to like the guy who becomes Abomination later. He says, hey, like we were working on this project, but I didn't tell him what it truly was. He thought he was working on a gamma project, but he ended up testing this on himself. And so, yeah, they were trying to make a super soldier serum, but they didn't tell him that that was what the project was really for.
Okay. Okay. The common thread, you know, you just described the comic book, just kind of evolution of the Hulk and how he's changed and evolved over time. But the thing that has been the most common is their played, you know, their alter ego, the ego of the scientist, Dr. Bruce Banner, is a physically weak and socially withdrawn and kind of like an emotionally reserved physicist. And they exist independently, but also simultaneously, because they're both aware of each other. And in the like the area of the cinematic realm, they've been played by multiple people. So Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno were the characters.
Who cameos as the security guard when he gets his pizza.
He gets coaxed by pizza, yep. and then you have Eric Bana, who plays both, because the, you know, when we talk about Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno, it was a live action, and so they had to have a meek physicist character that was an actor, and then a actual physical
and just a
Hulk,
huge big dude, yeah,
painted green. And but with Eric Bana, it was just him, and then Edward Norton, and finally Mark Ruffalo, who is going to definitely round out and kind of, I think, end Marvel's search for. I mean, he can't at this point. He's been in multiple films and some of the highest grossing.
He was actually the original pick for the Hulk for this by the director.
Good research, Kyle. I read that as well.
Yep. I read sometimes.
Yeah, thank you. When you're asked to, I appreciate it.
Yes, yes, yes. When I have to do homework, I do it.
So movie notes, just kind of, you know, going through some of the things that were observed throughout the movie. And, you know, we get to discuss whether, you know, they were entertaining or not. But as I mentioned in the beginning, right off the bat, there's no humor from what you talked about in the credits. It's just a like a story of how we got to where we're at. There's no humor. The one thing that really stuck out to me as far as like where there could have been humor, but it was very odd, was the diaphragm training with him and that guy when he was in Portugal, and they're sitting in that room and he's like sucking in his stomach and then he slaps him.
Oh yeah.
Like, I just felt like there could have been like something that's there. Where the, it could have started. I don't know, just sarcasm or some form of like, I don't know, snarkiness.
To me, the only humor in the entire film was Stan Lee's cameo. That was it.
That was a part too. That was something we talked about, the CGI blood drop. There was when he wipes up his blood, he missed an obvious huge streak and drop that was on that bottle.
Oh yeah.
And then that's Stan Lee's appearance. He's the one who drinks it and gets gamma sickness. And you talked about it like that was humorous, but at the same time, usually his cameos are like really snarky. They're smart ass. And, you know, he's playing a joke. And in this one, it was like, I think he was like, oh my, or something. And he drops a bottle and then that was it.
Yeah. And that was it. Yeah. It was his like least cameo-y cameo that he's done. At least from what I've seen from every other Marvel movie.
One thing I will say about this movie is that, you know, while there isn't any humor, and it is very different from all the other Marvel movies, I will say that there's some artistic pieces that I really enjoyed. And I don't know if you picked up on these, but there is every time Edward Norton is in a scene and he's Edward Norton and he's like kind of being troubled around being Hulk, whether it's laying in bed in Betty's house, whether it's in the hotel shower when he sees the machine gun in the shower head and he falls back. The shower tub is a light green. His sheets are a light green in Betty's house. When he's on campus, there's this green car that drives by him. So there was a definite...
there was like, a little theme there.
Yeah. Which that I thought, like I picked up on it watching it this time, and I thought it was pretty cool. The soda place where he works, obviously the soda is like a bright green soda.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dead giveaway.
And that was one thing that when he first comes onto the screen, you know, and as we talk about that, you know, how much money CGI rendering cost back in the day and just production in general, like you see him. And you notice they put him in the shadow so that they don't have to completely show you everything. And you wonder to yourself, are they saving money? Or are they waiting for a reveal? Mm-hmm. And then, yeah.
Yeah, especially since this was like when Marvel was not like the big movie powerhouse. So they didn't have the like extravagant, lavish budgets that they have today because they basically make all the money in the world with every movie that releases. But this movie didn't. Like, basically made as much money as Ang Lee's Hulk did. Like, their mega hit was Iron Man, and then this coming out right after didn't do nowhere near as well. So it wasn't like hit after hit after hit that Marvel's doing nowadays.
Well, then, I mean, I finally realized at the end that, like, they weren't saving any money. I mean, the fight scene in the middle of the campus where he's, you know, they're shooting the, what is it, they're like... audio waves at him or like a,
yes.
It's, yeah, so they're shooting that there's him like out in the light there, you know, there's helicopters, there's all this military stuff, which is probably live action and just, you know, like ammunition and TNT, but then the final scene in Harlem, I mean, that was a like a full movie in and of itself. So whenever I thought they were, you know, saving money in the beginning, they just blow the budget at the end of the movie.
Oh, God, yeah, especially when you had to have two giant CG characters fighting on screen and just causing massive destruction, especially back in that day with how detailed those characters are.
Oh, yeah.
You're spending some coin on that, and definitely.
You talked about this. You talked about it as a similar to a monster movie. Mm-hmm. And I agree, and I think, you know, the Abomination, you know, if you look at it, you know, what he's doing, he's tearing it up. It's a very Godzilla-y scene, you know, just kind of a dark city and fire everywhere and crushing everything. But I really like that, like the physical form, like how they created Abomination. And, you know, you're closer to the comics than I am, but I really enjoyed how they created that him as a monster. And I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I just didn't personally like the casting of the actor. Because
Tim Roth.
Yeah, when I see him, I see him as the guy off of what the TV show, like Liar, or something. Is
I saw. I remember him from Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. That's the one that like the things I remember him from. I agree. He was an odd pick.
Yeah, because he's supposed to be like this number one special forces guy, and when I think of like the tippity top of. Like clandestine operations, you know, and, you know, I'm the guy who does stuff that nobody else does. He is not the first person that comes to mind when I would cast somebody like that. He doesn't have that feel of someone who would have any sort of like intimidating presence.
Yeah.
Like we were told that he's a badass, but he didn't really do anything badass.
That's actually a really solid point because the, you know, as you cast... You know, we have Mark Ruffalo, Edward Norton, and Eric Bana. Eric Bana is kind of a bigger guy, but they're all skinny, like little dudes, and it plays into, you know, the historically how the Hulk has been written, and Edward Norton, you know, he's small and then he becomes huge. So it's very different alter egos. Tim Roth,
he's like 5'8".
Yeah, as a bad guy, he should have been big and then just got bigger almost, you know, like a, I can see that. I just don't know who they would have cast. I didn't have anybody on my mind.
Yeah, because that was like Abomination's like ambition in the film is he wanted more and more power, but he did not look powerful in any sense of the word when he first comes on scene. I looked at him and I go, okay, you look like a businessman. You don't look like a soldier, you know, who's like power hungry and has seen combat for 20 years.
Yeah. And the, he, something, this is kind of a little off topic, but, he had like a little like stubble, a little bit of, a beard growth.
Yeah.
And, William Hurt has, a huge bushy mustache, which is acceptable in the military. The one thing that I put a note in here, is there like a special branch of the military or like an area where you're kind of detached from the major areas to where you can just like chew on cigars and grow beards? Like that was one thing that was definitely like he was just disconnected.
Usually with like special forces, especially with like my family being a military family, like certain special forces do not have to adhere to strict codes like that. That's why you see a lot of the tier one operators with like massive bushy beards because they don't want to stand out in a crowd. But this guy had classic like Hollywood movie stubble. Like he did not have huge bushy beard or anything like that. It just basically looked like he hadn't shaved in a couple of days and got on a helicopter and and met the general is what he looked like.
Just seeing people like with like William Hurt had a every time he was in a like a military office or like just an area where he was running an operation through like ground control, he was chewing on an unlit cigar. He actually, that's like his thing throughout. I mean, he's one of the most consistent kind of ancillary characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it started here and he meets Tony Stark. So he's not an Iron Man, right?
No, not from, well, I'll find out when I watch the movie again, but from what I remember seeing, he was not, because especially since this movie came out 1 month after Iron Man, because Iron Man was May and then I believe Hulk was June. Right. This was our first introduction to him. And fun fact, he's also the only person from this movie who's appeared in the MCU because he was in Civil War as well.
Oh, right. Yeah. And Betty Ross is, we don't see her again.
Yep. Well, and that's one of my big criticisms of like, Liv Tyler's portrayal. Like, she was Edward Norton's girlfriend. She was not her own character.
Yeah, like, if you think about it. I just don't think she's a good actress.
Well, and me, I went, okay, like she didn't get a lot of screen time. Her voice was very soft.
Like, yep, and are like you breathy.
Are you having these problems? Like, like how long have you had them? Why didn't you? It was annoying. Nobody talks like that.
I know.
All the time. And it was, all of her dialogue was this really soft for, what are you, like, do you know it's you?
The Hulk? Who was Betty in the Eric Bana one?
That was, I know I have her face, but.
I mean, anybody is better than, Liv Tyler, I was talking to my wife, I did not like her in, she was in Empire Records, which was fine. I did not like her in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, she was Aragorn's girlfriend. That was what she was.
Yes,
like, that was her whole character arc.
It was Jennifer Connelly.
There we go. Yep.
Yeah, and I love her as an actress, and I actually think that one. If only we could have merged these and seen better decisions made as far as like, you know, the casting, the storyline. I just, there would have been so much to go on here.
Yeah, Edward Norton not trying to completely take over the screenplay.
Yeah, so that was something you were talking about. It's definitely worth noting and speaking about again. He, as an actor, is kind of well-known throughout Hollywood as being someone who kind of, like, helps the director through, whether it's dialogue or shots. And I would assume some directors enjoy that. And I would assume a lot of them are like, I'm never fucking working with this person again.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Because they went, we're not bringing him on for Avengers. exactly what happened. And from what I remember, like, Universal distributed this film along with Marvel, which I think is also why we haven't seen more standalone Hulk films, because I'm not sure that Marvel actually still has the full license, kind of like how they had to partner with Sony to get Spider-Man.
Yeah. Which I just, I did watch, well, I haven't finished it, but I've, I'm watching Venom, which is actually not a bad film. You know, at some point it's not within this universe, but I would definitely like to talk to you about that. Once I finish it. So, this movie had a budget of $150 million. So there's that money we talked about. Opening weekend, it did $55 million, and then it grossed $134 million. And then cumulative worldwide is $263 million. So, I mean, it made some money.
Yep.
And like you said, it was definitely a, like, a strong presence in the box office.
But it didn't make all the money in the world like the other movies did.
Yeah. I mean, it's never going to stop.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, this was not the movie that made Marvel the powerhouse it was today. This was the movie that went, like, oh, is Marvel just a one-hit wonder? Because they made Iron Man, and that was really, really great. And then they put out this, which was okay, but it wasn't, oh, my God, like, this is what a great movie. Because then, in the same year, The Dark Knight comes out and basically says, I'm the greatest superhero movie of all time. What are you going to do about it? And the Hulk did not, I think, age well, because it had to go up against those two movies in the same year.
Oh, there's one note that I wanted to talk about before we go into some trivia and just some fun facts about this film. There's a scene at the end where he gets a hold of, he has this massive fight on top of that building in Harlem. He gets stabbed in his chest and he's like, you know, he finally gains control over Abomination. You know, he does Hulk Smash. He actually does every one of Hulk's known, I don't know, like, superpowers or powers.
Yeah, he does in that one smash. Scene. He does, like, the thunderclap.
Thunderclap.
You know, that he does. Yep. Yep.
And then he overpowers Abomination. He's choking him with a chain. Everyone in the world that's been seeing this, and especially people in Harlem and the people that are watching this, would like to see this monster get killed. I mean, like, it's like when you... You know, in the slasher movies, you want to make, I personally would cut off Jason or Michael Myers' head. I mean, that's what I would want to do that. And Liv Tyler screams, you know, no. And it's like, why? And I mean, I know that if we think about it on a more like psychological level, she doesn't want people watching the person she knows to be, Bruce Banner, as the Hulk, be a monster by killing a monster. Like, I think there's that angle where she's like, no.
And I think that's the angle.
Okay.
That's what I think.
It was just obnoxious because I'm guessing that the general and the government took Abomination for testing. I mean, I know they didn't kill him.
Yeah. And we'll probably never see that character ever again.
I find that in unfortunate. The MCU. Yeah. And that sucks.
Yeah. Cause for how strong Abomination is, just to only see him on screen for, what, 15 minutes of the film? Maybe.
Yeah.
If that, and then, okay, he gets choked out by a giant chain and then passes out, but, okay, Hulk gets thrown through a couple buildings and hit in the head with some big old things on a chain that he's swinging around, and he just gets up for it like it's nothing. You know,
yeah.
And he goes, oh, okay, yeah, I'll fight you. But a little chain chokes him out and he can't recover in a minute and be right back to fighting strength. I felt like that last part of that scene was, maybe it was rushed, or maybe Edward Norton didn't want the Hulk to kill anybody, so he wrote that in.
Oh, I just read that. He rewrote parts of the scripts almost every day.
Yeah, I think that's why he didn't get asked back.
I really like him in Rounders and in Fight Club. I love those movies to death. I am not a director or producer, so I don't know what it looks like on set for those individuals. And I could only assume that having an actor doing that would suck. But what, you know, ends up coming out, like, if you just watch the movie for what it is, you enjoy it. And he's kind of a weak little, I don't know. I wouldn't call him a hero in this movie. In every movie he plays that kind of, I don't know, like sappy, skinny dude. American History X was probably one of the only ones where he's just insanely aggressive.
Oh, yeah. And in this one, like, he's super passive, like he's supposed to be, like, when he's not in Hulk form. But he doesn't really do anything heroic until Abomination.
And this is one of those scenes where he's in the back of the helicopter and he's like, I have to do this. And he just dives out. And there's the moment where they cut out the shit part, but he's like, oh, shit, where he opens his eyes and they don't turn green.
Yep. And that could have been a comedic part, but the tone was so dark that it wasn't comedic. Like, it was comedic in Thor Ragnarok when Mark Ruffalo hit the rainbow, bridge.
But that was the best.
Yeah, but when he hit, I was more of like, oh, okay. He hit the ground. Well, he's going to turn into the Hulk. I was like, just watch. It didn't have that funny impact that it should have had, because their tone had been so dark for the whole film. No matter what part you were in the film, whether you were in the Harrison Ford fugitive film that is part of the movie, or whether you were in the monster movie part of the film, or whether you were in the Tim Roth "I'm going to be an abomination" part of the film, it was dark.
And it was different. That is another good point. I keep saying that's another good point. Like, you weren't going to bring anything to the table. That's not the case.
Never.
But I never thought about it as three different movies. And it is. And there's a stylistic direction that somebody's going through there. And like we talked about with thinking the, stopping him from killing him, to understand what the theme of their relationship is and might be in the future, with the themes of the green everywhere, to be really artistically, in tune with what's going on. And then you talk about the three different storylines with the, him hiding out, him rekindling his relationship, and then the general and the daughter, and then Tim Roth completely on the side has this power struggle and this hunger to become, he doesn't know it yet, but that abomination of aggression, which is, I never thought about it as that, but it is. Mm-hmm. And this, it seemed to fly by a little bit quicker this time, but it definitely had a tone of dragging on in some parts.
Yeah. And to me, like, not only did it drag on, but then there wasn't enough development of those three storylines to begin with, because you don't see him like in his like Hulk form, I don't think enough. You don't see him on the run enough to really build characters for like his human companions, like, because Liv Tyler just, she did, to me, she did nothing for her character, because all she was Bruce Banner's former lady. Like, she was not her own character that had enough development, because you had these three branching paths that would really abruptly cut as well. They wouldn't kind of naturally progress. You would have, like, say, like Bruce Banner being taken away in a helicopter, immediately cut to Tim Roth knocking out the major and then saying, like, I want his blood. I want it now. Give it to me.
It was good, but it was, it's just in the other ones you watch, it's a story arc, and there's a piece of the, just kind of like the trivia or like need to knows or fun facts about the movie, where we talk about Edward Norton not only writing the script, but he touches on like not necessarily needing to show the audience the roots of a comic book character. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. And I think that maybe it had something to do with him trying to rewrite it, because the director and who'd you say? Was it Universal, the studio that produced it?
Yeah. Yeah. So Universal was the distribution studio.
They found his rewrite, because he rewrote the script, like the entire script, not only daily, he rewrote an entire script. They actually found it satisfactory. And his statements were, we don't have to build on that. But, unfortunately, I don't know if it was like an amalgamation of everybody's ideas that created those three different storylines or four different storylines. But what you see in Iron Man is a simplistic, like, here's a billionaire prick, highly intelligent engineer who can... he creates these weapons of mass destruction. He gets the shit end of the stick on that one and ends up in a cave and then finds his way out. But that storyline is so much more seamless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like it gives us something to like care about Tony Stark about. This begins almost where Ang Lee's Hulk ended. Because remember, like, Eric Bana's character was, like, in, like, the jungle, you know, doing stuff. And this movie starts with him in Brazil. Mm-hmm. To me, it feels like a sequel in a movie that's not connected at all. And so, to me, that also could have hurt, like, its box office performance. Because people might have went, hey, like, we didn't already like this other film. And if this is, like, a sequel to that film that we already didn't like... Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I necessarily want to see it because especially just the way it starts off, if you weren't totally familiar with the MCU, you could go, oh, yeah, that's a sequel to Hulk.
Yep.
Because it starts right where Hulk ended. And I don't think that was a good idea for the film at all because it connects it too closely to that one. Where it needed to be the MCU version of it. Something happened during Edward Norton's multiple rewrite session to me that did not help that at all.
Well, Lewis Lederer, the director of this, I think had a lot of input on this and took it, whether whoever was like inputting their ideas or making the decisions, his view of what the film should be was like a huge deviation from Ang Lee's, as we've talked about. Not only can you notice it in just watching the movie, but it's this one, Lewis Lederer wanted it to have more of like an action-filled tone, which is what the rest of the Marvel movies continue on with. Mm-hmm. And if you keep up with, you know, that feeling of like just focusing on like a poetic feel or like, I don't know, but like something that was more of a drama, I guess, with that one, which was weird because then they would choose in the Ang Lee version to have Hulk be able to jump continents, you know, so you're showing a different, a completely different version of this character. So he did take it and make it grittier and darker and scarier. But it's definitely a complete deviation from the other one, which I think was necessary and needed, which is why I ended up liking it, you know, for mm-hmm. those reasons. And I wonder if it was the only one, you know, if it would still stand up today as being the better Hulk film, because it is the only standalone that we have right now.
I especially since they pretty much did the exact same financially. Both of them, I mean, yeah. Essentially the audience said these are on the same level. And I think the MCU one is a better film because mm-hmm. I actually don't fall asleep during that one like I usually do during Ang Lee's Hulk. Because Ang Lee's is just, there's just way too much non-comic book stuff that I just don't like at all. Like, give me Hulk smashing. I don't care about like Eric Bana having an issue in like a nuclear test facility about some sort of memory that he had. Like that movie's so forgettable to me, I'm probably getting that scene wrong.
Yeah.
Like, that's how much I dislike the film.
Well, they focused in on like dad issues and right? And like a lot more of those relationship based issues.
Mm-hmm. And we all want to see Hulk smash. We don't want to see like Hulk, the rom-com without the com.
Yeah. Just a rom.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not my cup of tea when it comes to that.
So let's get into some of that trivia and fun facts here. So I think we may have mentioned this already, but Lewis Lederer wanted Mark Ruffalo for the role of Bruce Banner, but Marvel insisted on Edward Norton.
Mm-hmm. Which was their first and I think only mistake in terms of casting that they've
done.
And
they realized that.
Yeah, because then they went, you know what? I think Mark Ruffalo might be a good choice there.
Mm-hmm. What I did mention earlier is it took visual effects artists over a year to construct the shot where Bruce Banner's gamma irradiated blood falls through the factory three stories. So that took over a year. I said months, I think. That took over a year.
Ooh, boy. Oh, man. Even worse.
I know. Liv Tyler accepted her role without even reading the script.
Oh, God. So she just wanted to be in a superhero film.
Yep. And this is my wife and I were talking about how in the first Thor, one of the reasons a lot of people signed on for that movie was because Kenneth Branagh was directing it, and he had been attached to such amazing, like dramatic and cinematic films and Shakespearean films where like, so that got Anthony Hopkins to sign on. So you're going to get more people watching and wanting to go see that movie, even if it is a comic book movie, because of who's in it. And she may have, because Edward Norton was doing it, and William Hurt, you know, and even Tim Roth, even if you didn't like him in that role, he was still, you know, somewhat of a well-known actor. So that may be one of the reasons that, you know, a good majority of the people signed on for the movie. Because it was a risk.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. They also had, I mean, they did have a big cast in terms of credibility. Like, Edward Norton is Oscar nominated. Liv Tyler, I think, is Oscar nominated. I think you have an Oscar winner in there as well. I mean, you have actors who are good actors who have acted good at least once in their life. But to me, you could have casted better people for some of these roles. And I like, especially Tim Roth, I just think he was totally miscast as Abomination, because he's not imposing at all when he's a human. And I want to be afraid of a villain, at least somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to look at him and go, dude, I could beat you up. Hey, that's like, you ain't tough, and you don't look tough, especially when I think he tells the general that he's 39 years old at one part of the film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and that
That was a weird exchange of dialogue.
Yeah, because he says, what are you, 45? And he's like, 39. It's like, why even have that guessing game?
Right.
Why don't you just be like, how old are you? 39. Mm-hmm. All right. Like, go, then move on from there.
Yeah, yeah, and just, yeah, have him go, oh, okay, yeah, now I want, the body that I had 10 years ago, like he said. Yeah, I was. That was a weird exchange.
The thing that I mentioned earlier was the film is tinted in a shade of green, which is the shade of the Hulk skin. The shade of the Hulk skin does vary from film to film. Mm-hmm. So this one is a lighter green versus the one that we know currently, which is a darker, I guess, more gamma, you know, related, like Mountain Dewy green.
Mm-hmm. There's also the purple pants. That was actually a good thing when they bought him like the big purple stretchy pants, but he said no.
Yep.
He's like, those are kind of corny, but that was kind of a nod to Hulk always wearing purple pants.
Right. In an attempt to be silly or funny.
Yep. But they didn't set up the funny at all.
Mm-mm.
Was the problem.
So anybody that has been a participant in a Hulk project, live action, I think even animated, not everyone, but a good majority of them actually made a cameo in this movie. So the first one, I guess when they open up, they're watching, somebody's watching The Courtship of Eddie's Father, which stars Bill Bixby.
Hmm.
The Lou Ferrigno is the security guard that he gives pizza to.
Okay.
The Italian guy, the guy that he goes and visits and stays with, which I still don't understand their relationship or who he is. Maybe you have information on that. But he, I think he voiced Bruce Banner in an animated version of it, he played something in the 1970s pertaining to Hulk. So a lot of people were connected to it.
Yes. Actually, yeah, there was quite a bit of, like, homages, like, paid to a lot of either different actors or different people who played them. Mm-hmm. I also, from, like, my little trivia thing here, even Tim Roth understood that he was not a very imposing guy when he was playing the character. Mm-hmm. Because he did hire a personal trainer, but when you're not a very big dude to begin with, even in terms of height as well. He even said it was hard, like, thoroughly playing the character and getting it to where he wanted to be, because he's not a very scary dude.
I know, like,
to begin with, so even he understood it. but he was a Hulk fan. So that's why he took on the project. Was that so? I mean, at least I can give the guy credit for being a fan instead of just saying, oh, hey, it's a superhero movie. I'll do it.
Yep. Yep. And just blindly going in. Mm-hmm. Or saying no, because it is a comic book movie, which I think a lot of people who were, I read that David Duchovny was up for the role of Bruce Banner.
Lord.
I that would have been weird, but I do love David Duchovny, but a lot of people make those really drastic, quick decisions on that basis of yes, because it's a comic book movie, or no. Now, if it's a comic book movie that's offered to them, everybody will bite. In 2008 and prior, I mean, we had Batmans and we had a lot of DC, but and, you know, some Spider-Man, but it wasn't anything that anybody wanted to grab onto and say, this is going to be a hit. It was, you could get typecasts or, you know, or it could be just kind of a flop that you spent a lot of your time doing. At an hour and 52 minutes, this is the shortest film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
For good reason.
Yes. Yeah, we didn't need more of that.
No, I even don't think a longer runtime would have done it justice, because I think there was about 70 minutes that were cut from the film in editing. And that was more attributed towards the origin story of it. So I don't even think like giving 30 minutes of an origin would have actually done it any better, especially with the dark tone.
Which was Edward Norton's suggestion. Yeah.
Yep. And yeah, I just think like this movie, while fun, doesn't get me excited for like Marvel's future projects. Like say when I first saw Iron Man, when I saw that and I went, I cannot wait to see what they do with this character, this character, this character, this character. And then Hulk came out and I went, okay, maybe I'm not so excited to see what they do with all of these other characters from my childhood. Yeah.
Unfortunately, the one we have to compare it to is Iron Man, which is almost not fair.
Oh, no, no, it's not even a contest.
In the end credit scene, when the movie does finally come to a close, immediately after the final cliffhanger, when he's sitting in that cabin and he's meditating and he turns, you know, his eyes turn green, which, you know, alludes to, and I think I understand it more now just watching the movies versus the comic book, that it's like when Mark Ruffalo turns around in the first Avengers and he said, that's my secret. I'm always angry.
Yeah.
I think that's what you see at the end scene when he's meditating, is he's not trying to control the Hulk coming out. He's trying to just be in control and say, okay, I'll allow the Hulk to come out when he needs to, and kind of living in like a symbiotic relationship, or like a balanced relationship.
Yeah. He's always in a state of just almost angry enough to where,
because he smiles when his eyes turn green. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And so now he realizes that he's getting more control over the transformation. And to me, I think that's how like they were able to tie in that film almost with the Avengers, was just that one line, especially if you've seen the film.
Right.
Yeah. Cause then you can go, oh, okay, well that worked.
Yeah. Those were the moments that I liked that little smirk he had. I don't like seeing Edward Norton as this like really like almost like malnourished, you know, weak individual. I like seeing him in those. That's why I love Fight Club. And I do like American History X. That movie is super dark and it's not like one that you can watch every weekend. But I'll watch Rounders all the time, even though he is kind of a mousy like asshole who's conniving and always, you know, lying in that movie. His chest is out, you know, he's like more in control of his character than, you know, something like this. So I did like seeing it end on a strong note. And then after that cliffhanger where you see him meditate and his eyes go green, we see Tony Stark walk into the bar and talk to the general. So
about, hey, like we're building a team. And he's like, who's we? And then you go, oh yeah, that Nick Fury guy.
Like, who was not in this movie.
Yep. Also this is the first film to not have a like post credit scene, because all of those came before the credits.
Yeah.
So this is one of those Marvel movies where when the credits roll, it's done. You don't get, the shawarma scene like the Avengers got or anything like that.
No, that would have been so much better, too, because he's running in that glade and he ends up in the cabin and then he's meditating. That on its own as a chunk of an end credit scene in the middle of the credits would have been so much better. Mm-hmm. And then the Tony Stark bar one, if you end that and then end at the Marvel title card like they did, yep. I mean, not that I'm sometimes I get like really upset because I'm nearing 40 and I'm an old man in my own mind having to sit in the theater to wait. I'm just, mm-hmm. I sit there grumbling like, well, when the fuck is it going to come up? Well, I, you know, and now yeah. I sit with like normal movies that I go to. I sit and wait for an end credit scene because Marvel's ruined me for that fucking reason.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah, but yeah, like, we all expect
this
something
is right
more.
After it. Yeah. So that they would have been, yeah, I think it would have been a different tone. Do you have any of the other notes that you want to share about the movie?
Hulk has a total of 6 words. Leave me alone, Hulk smash, and Betty.
And the Abomination speaks.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I know they're not the same mm-hmm. being, but.
But he's almost like fully coherent where Hulk is still like a 6-year-old kid.
Yeah.
In terms of his knowledge of the English language.
Well, even in Ragnarok, he does have a larger vocabulary, but it's still very basic.
Mm-hmm. There was also, there was one more thing that I actually found interesting. Oh, yeah. Sam Elliott, who played like the general in Ang Lee's Hulk, mm-hmm. He actually wanted to reprise his role.
Was Sam Elliott in there?
Mm, yep.
Oh.
And so he actually did want to come back, but William Hurt was then cast for it. So
well, what I like William Hurt versus mm-hmm. Sam Elliott.
Yep. Yeah. Sam Elliott's more of a guy you hire for a Western.
Absolutely.
Like
every
is what you do. Yeah. 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 He has the mustache for a Western. William Hurt had a mustache for a general, mm-hmm. in a sense, would be my best thing I could say about it.
Sam Elliott can play a very good villain. I've seen him play a villain in, I can't remember what movie it is, but he can go definitely both ways as far as like a friendly, like he was Virgil Earp or one of the Earps in Tombstone. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he was the dude in Lebowski. So he can play a likable character. Like easily, but he can also be very intimidating. But I don't, mm-hmm. I think William Hurt, I couldn't see Sam Elliott in the Avengers movies like I see William Hurt.
Yeah, yeah. Like William Hurt's more imposing than I think Sam Elliott could be.
Oh, yeah.
In the role to where, like, even in Civil War, you hated the guy. I don't know if mm-hmm. you could hate Sam Elliott like the way you hated William Hurt because he played it so well. Mm-hmm. To where you just go, God, I hate that guy, like under your breath every time he makes a decision. You never said that in like Ang Lee's Hulk. You went, okay, I know where he's coming from. Is like what Sam Elliott did with that character, where William Hurt went, God, I hate that guy. And that's what you wanted out of him. You wanted him to be the general that like you hated. Because
absolutely.
Yeah, because you're like, no, don't you understand? That's the kind of reaction you wanted to get.
What am I trying to say? Like that military or militaristic view of being like having that hubris of thinking you have the right answer for everything, or that control that one tries to find and they become a villain. Like Jeff Bridges did it really well in Iron Man, and I think William Hurt did it really good in this movie and moving forward, where you see his wants and needs come first, and those drive him to become a villain. And he then, you know, he comes back around. He then you see him turn again as the movies progress, because he's still trying to fight for what he thinks is right or what he thinks the world needs. And Jeff Bridges as a character ends up falling because of his want and thirst for that.
Yeah, because of his aspirations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I mean, I as a character, I like him. And it is unfortunate that we have to compare it to Iron Man, because that is what we know in it as a comparison for the beginning, for the first stages of
the MCU. Yeah, the phase one
films. Phase one, but it's reality. And, you know, when you compare the two, they're very different for very good reasons. But, you know, overall, I really enjoyed this movie. Did you like the movie? Did you like you said at the beginning that it was a 6 out of 10? You still there? 6 out of 10?
Yeah. I'm still in, like, to me, it's like an above average. Because to me, I would just consider, like, 5 out of 10 mediocre. And then 6 out of 10 is, like, slightly above average. 7 out of 10 being above average. Mm-hmm. To me, it sits right at that 6 because it's a movie that I will watch to record a podcast for research purposes, but it is not a movie that I will watch if I go, hey, you know what? I got a day off from work. Let's watch a movie. To me, it's not like at that level of enjoyment to where I'll just go, yeah, I'll watch it. I would have to stumble upon it on the TV and then lose the remote.
And that's, I bought it and I was very interested that my family is interested in watching it as well. And that's I think that's for me, I would give it like a 6 or a 7 because it was engaging enough to keep my attention, you know, for the hour and 52 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. If like, say if I don't want to pick up my phone at all, then to me, it's a movie that got my attention. If I even pick up my phone once, I know it wasn't grabbing me as much. And so I was answering text messages during the film. So I know like it didn't grab me too, like as much as say, like if Civil War was on or if like the Winter Soldier was on for Captain America or like Iron Man was on, I'm basically not answering anything because those are great movies and I love watching them. And, you know, we'll probably forget to answer a phone call or something.
I apologize for interrupting.
Go on.
There's several movies that came out in 2008 at the same time that are text while you watch movies. Now, I will exclude some of these. Iron Man is in there. Mm-hmm. Like Slumdog Millionaire. I know a lot of people like that. I watched that movie because everybody told me I needed to. Yeah. Step Brothers is in there. Tropic Thunder.
Oh, I love Tropic Thunder.
I love Tropic Thunder. That's definitely not one that I will text while watching. But I mean, since I've seen it so many times and it is kind of a longer movie, it has Robert Downey Jr. in it as well. Mm-hmm. I like that movie as a background movie, but because I enjoy it, not because it's irritating.
Yep, precisely.
Hancock came out at that time too. We don't have to go into that, but I for some reason like that movie. I don't like Will Smith as a dramatic actor, but I don't know why I like that movie.
Not a fan. I've watched it multiple times and I just still cannot get into it one bit.
Well, Hellboy 2 came out.
Love
which
it.
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
No.
Yep. Yeah. And Cloverfield or to name a few are some of the ones that came out in 2008.
I actually liked that because it was like you hadn't had like that found footage film in a while since like Blair Witch.
And it was a monster movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I actually liked that, kind of thought it was well done. Not a movie I watched on a like yearly basis even. Like I think I've only seen it maybe twice or three times. But I would say I liked it better than this movie in terms of it being a monster movie.
Yeah,
kept me more engaged.
Well, Kyle, I thank you for connecting with me long distance. We have a long distance relationship, as it were.
Hell yeah.
And the next time we get to connect, we will be discussing what we've kind of already discussed, but we're going to go even deeper and further into just one of the best films that has come out from this universe, which is Iron Man, directed by John Favreau, and resurrecting the career of Robert Downey Jr.
And making Disney the powerhouse that it is today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it started so many things. And this will be our lead up into Endgame. So as we have already shared with you, we will be leading up and watching every movie chronologically until we finally get to Endgame. So for now, I want to thank you, Kyle, once again. And I will say goodbye to everyone listening. And Kyle, you will say
good luck.
All right. Peace. I'm not going to be able to do that.